it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Ashes Daily Podcast and what has been emphatically England's day at the Keir Oval. They finished today leading Australia by 377 runs, with pretty much everyone contributing with the bat. I'm Katie Whitney and I'm here with Phil Walker. Huge news breaking at the end of play. Stuart Broad has announced that he will retire from Test cricket at the end of this Test match. He walked off the field and told Sky that he decided at 8:30pm last night that this Test match will be his last. Phil, what was your reaction to that bit of news?
A little bit shocked. I think most people were. I think Ben Stokes was as well when Broad told him this morning. Last night he told the team this morning. But he's always had a sense of theatre, and so much of that has driven the story. And so the more we try and digest it, the more it makes perfect sense. He's synonymous with the Ashes. He's played every Test match at home in the Ashes contest since his debut in 2009. So that's 25 consecutive tests. He is part of the folklore of the thing, as is his dad. It makes poetic sense for him, right? To say now's the time. And also the timing of the announcement as well, as we move into the final stretch of this series and this particular game, is if we needed any further motivation to convince ourselves that we are in for a fabulous and memorable finale to what's been the most extraordinary series that we've seen in England in many, many years, then he's just provided it, hasn't he?
Yeah.
As ever, Broad is always one step ahead of us all. And now he's given that final little sprinkling of flavour and intrigue as we move into down the stretch.
Yeah, box office from start to finish.
How did you feel?
The more I've thought about it, the more, like you said, it's made sense. As I said, box office from first to last. I think there's quite a lot, actually. There's sadness that a contest that has brought out so much of the best in him and so many incredible moments, that this will be the last time we see him do that. And then this will be the last time we can dissect another bonkers piece of thing, anything from Stuart Broad. That will be that will be missed. Have a favourite memory from Stuart Broad?
Oh, there is plenty. But again, just before we get onto that, this is the Oval, and it's the self-styled home of the Teary Farewell, right? It even badges itself as the final test. That's how it markets itself. It's taken 285 Test cricketers. This is the final game for 285 male Test cricketers, of which 117 are English and 67 are Australian, by the way. Make that 118. Make that 286 and perhaps more. We can always come to that as well in a moment. But Broad has gazumped any talk about Moeen Ali's finale and, you know, whisper it over to Jimmy, although we know how he's going to go. He's not going to retire anytime soon. A fair play to him. Favourite memories? Oh, well, the 8 for 15 is the cliche, but I was lucky. I happened to be there. And for once in my life, I got up really early and headed up to Nottingham from London really early. So I was there before anybody began. And I remember there being a sort of a special murmur in the air. The series was on the line at fourth Test match. England hadn't fancied themselves in that summer under Cook. Australia were probably a more complete side at the time. And as we know, we know what happened. Broad nicked everybody off. Stokes took that one in the grabbers. The Edvard Munch face emerged from Broad, which has been patented since, like many other things. You know, he created the celeb repeal. You can take that or leave that, of course. But that sense of raising his game for the big moments. I remember he gave an interview at Brisbane in whatever it would have been, 2013, I think it was. 2013. And he took 6 on day one after the Brisbane Courier Mail had gone after him. They'd called him the English medium pacer because he famously not walked that time. Took 6 on day one, walked into the press conference with the newspaper under his arm, paraded it around to everybody. And then he said something very interesting afterwards. He said, we did some psychological tests, as in the England squad did some psychological tests before that series. And 3 of the England players came out as the kind of characters, according to this metric, that would grow in the pressure cooker. And Broad being Broad announced that to the whole room, simultaneously plumping himself up, declaring that he was up for the scrap, but also rather awkwardly putting the rest of his team rather in the shade. And, you know, we all know what happened that winter. But the moral of that tale is that Broad, like all the great sports people, gets bigger when the pressure is on. And most mortals, they fade away, they diminish. With Broad, he's always gone the other way. And you, what stands out for you?
Well, I think you can give a lot about Broad by thinking that. Let me try that again. I think the biggest compliment you can give him is that the longer I've thought about it, the more spells I've thought are my favourite. So I initially thought, like, yeah, the Trent Bridge, the 8 for 15, and then I thought, oh no, what about Durham 2030?
Right.
What about his spell up there? And then I thought, oh no, what about 2009 when he was here? What about that hat trick against India? What about all of these incredible spells that you can almost plot your where you were at in your life alongside these Stuart Broad magnificent spells? And that kind of says a lot about what he's meant for England fans over the years, I guess. But that 2009 one, the more I've thought about it, stands out for me. One Australian wicket falling after the other to this young kid, you know, with a mop of blonde hair who shouldn't look like a cricketer at all. and he comes and he wins England the Ashes here in the most dramatic of ways. And that sums Stuart Broad up. He's been the same ever since. He hasn't changed.
Yeah, and he's grown into the persona as well. I think we all know what lies ahead for him. He'll be on your TV screens from here on in. And so he should, because he's a very astute and articulate reader of the game. He's a natural in front of the camera as well. And the other thing with Broad that we forget, he's a real cricket saddo. He's a badger, he's a geek, he's a nuffy. He's got it bad. He's obsessed with the game. And he said so this summer, that he's enjoying it just as much as ever, that he's as engaged as he's ever been. And so the Broad story on the pitch is done, but Broad's contribution to the game and to the colour and the vibrancy of it will continue. Look, fair play to him. He's just been compulsively watchable, whatever he's doing. And to have played all 5 this summer as well, and to have played against Ireland, so to have played 6 games in seven weeks or so, and to have grown into his work as he's gone, is a mark of his competitive instincts.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure there'll be an outpouring of love here for him tomorrow, Monday, whenever it is that he bowls.
Not so much in the press box, by the way.
No.
I mean,
didn't go down
there's
well.
One or two hearts that sank with the news as people were just pressing send on their copy. And then, here we go.
It's a great place to be when that happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, we could talk about Broad for hours, and I'm sure we will. From endings to beginnings, though, I want to talk a bit about Zach Crawley today.
Right.
He was brilliant today, and it caps off a brilliant series from him. I want to read out some stats, first of all. He scored 480 runs in this series. The next leading run scorer is Usman Khawaja with 424. He's faced 96 overs worth of deliveries more than Crawley in this series for those runs. 480 is more runs than Andrew Strauss or Alistair Cook made in any home series for England. And it's the most by an England opener in a home Ashes series this century. What a vindication of the backing of Zach Crawley before this series.
That is exactly the word for it. He began the series in iconic fashion, clattering that ball through the covers, and he began day 3 here in exactly the same fashion. That 73, 74, curtailed soon after lunch, but that's all priced in. That 70-odd was the complete Zach Crawley knock. The 189, unforgettable as it was, littered with astonishing pieces of stroke play. Nonetheless, it was streaky, right? For the first 70-odd runs, he could have been out 3 or 4 times. Today was the Crawley of your dreams, because it was measured, it was controlled, but it was done with absolute authority. I spoke to Ollie Robinson about him a few days ago, and he said, as a seam bowler, he is as hard a player as you can bowl to in the game, because your margin for error is minuscule. And as we've been saying for what feels like 2 or 3 years, if he could just develop a little bit more nuance outside of off stump and a tiny bit better judgment by just a few percent, not to try and, you know, take an outswinger through extra cover off the stickers. Sometimes you can just let it go by. Sometimes you can play it quietly under your eyes. You saw that today. It was absolutely masterful. And also in his slipstream, Ben Duckett as well, just a couple of 40s in the game, but both run a ball 40s. England have found, they're an odd couple, right? They're, you know, little and large and all the rest of it, but they work. They are nerveless. They have their own ways of doing it. And it must be nightmarish for a seam attack, because you have one who's crouchy and small, hits it in funny areas. And then you have another who will pull you in front of square if you drop it a yard short, and he'll drive you on the up if you're a tiny bit too full. Mm. They're always going to give you a chance. But of all the stories around the Stokes experiment this summer, the one that's been nailed beyond question is the opening berth. And that has been a problem for England for years and years and years. There's a weird irony to it, right? That we assumed that English openers had it down. They had the way to do it. There was one way of doing it in England. Play it late, play it under your eyes. Usman Khawaja said, come to England and open the batting. You're going to go nowhere. Low expectations was literally his quote in the build-up to this series. Well, turns out that we've been wrong all along. We've been wrong for centuries. And they've pulled it off.
Yeah, completely. And I think you can look at Zach Crawley's evolution through this series, and you could see that evolution reflected in England's batting today. They finished the day 9 down and they scored a 5 and over, there or thereabouts, for most of the day. Didn't look massively troubled. And it was almost like nothing was going to stop them, really. It was quite a weird day to watch, that they were scoring so quickly, yet they weren't taking exceptional risks when doing so. What did you make of it?
I found the post-tea session of about 45 minutes to an hour when Root was in, with Bairstow, I found it peculiar. From an Australian perspective, it wasn't like they were on the ropes. It was like they were on the stool, and they had the cutsman behind him, and the towel was about to be thrown in, and it felt like, not that they'd given up, because they're a proud cricket team, of course they are, but that they'd run out of ideas and run out of nervous energy and run out of belief. And I think when you keep getting slapped around the face, eventually you're going to go down. And that's what it felt like. But because they are such a good cricket team, they found the way again. Now, the clutch moment of the day was probably the Joe Root dismissal, right? Because what did he get? 91?
91. I think.
A grubber. We can come to the pitch in a minute, by the way. But that changed the tempo and the complexion of the evening session. And then I thought Australia did really well for the last hour and a half to control England. But Todd Murphy bowled well across the board, really. You know, there's some real ticker there. But I think overall, this was the most complete batting performance that they've put together. It sounds silly to say it when they made, 580, 90 at Old Trafford. But that was on the back of a worldie and a streaky worldie from Crawley. This was a, like, the whole lot of them. Mm. They all came at you. Harry Brook was the only one to miss out.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird when you can say that the best thing about today was that it wasn't exceptional, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. But exactly that. And if they can find that kind of balance, then they're going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, exactly. And just a bit more on Australia. Like you said, they did seem to hit a wall today. And look, they're going to go home with the urn. And that's a great indictment on what they've achieved as a cricket team. They'll go home with the World Test Championship. But it's worth saying they've been here a long time now. And it's a long old slog. And it does maybe feel like this Test match was maybe one too far for them. But having said that, as you said about the pitch, they are still just about in it, right? Are they?
Yeah, look, to carry on the boring old analogy, they do have a puncher's chance. They're down, they're knackered, they've been on the ropes, they've been hanging onto the heavy bag, swaying like hanging onto to a barrel in a shipwreck for the last 2 weeks, it feels. Nonetheless, if they get going tomorrow, if they can put a platform down and Steve Smith turns in one of his masterpieces, then they have an outside chance here, for sure. We've seen the Oval for the last 2 or 3 years. Teams bowl first. There's a little bit of live grass on the pitch, and then it flattens out and it's pretty docile by day four. I take us back to, the Surrey-Hampshire game earlier in the season, first home game, I think it was, and Surrey did it for two, took chase down 270-odd for two. Easiest time to bat in the game was on day four. That said, what you saw at the back end there with Todd Murphy is that a couple broke through the surface, kicked off a length. The LBW that was turned down off against Wokes, I think it was, went through the surface. You know, puffs of dust kicking up. So that will be concerning for them. I guess the caveat to that is, will Moeen Ali turn up tomorrow? Will he be able to play? I suspect that come 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, you'll see him on the pitch. That's my suspicion. Might be totally wrong. But if it's not Mo, then Joe Root will bowl a few.
Ben Stokes is in practice. He's off. He's before the start of play every day of this test match.
Every
and I'm waiting
morning.
And I'm ready to see Ben Stokes as the off-spinner in test cricket.
Yeah. And then, of course, coming back to where we began, we'll have the crowd behind the broad farewell party, right? Mm. So tomorrow is huge for Australia. I felt today was a big day for them, but I just don't think they had anything left in the field. But the batting's a different story. I'm looking forward to seeing Warner tomorrow. I've really warmed to him in recent years. He's a fascinating cricketer to talk about. And you see him wrestling with himself for months, right? And you saw it here again early on in this game. You saw it at the start of the summer in the India game. And look, if he gets 70-odd tomorrow, this crowd will be with him. Trust me, they will be with him and they will rise as one if he goes well tomorrow. It looms immensely large for Australia and large as well for England, but particularly for Australia, because if they can pull this off, if they can get away with this, and if they can haul in 380-odd, whatever they're going to end up chasing, then it will be the most spectacular heist. No, heist is harsh because that sounds sort of slightly pejorative. I don't mean that. It will be a spectacular achievement. Mm. Simple as that.
Yeah,
really.
Completely. It'll be the highest chase ever here, I believe, in
right.
a test match.
Right.
But we will find out tomorrow for what could be a day of endings. So cheers, Phil. You can tune back in tomorrow to hear us dissect everything that happens tomorrow, and it promises to be an absolute corker.
Podcast Network.